This is the Travel Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Propelic, bringing you the news and insights and what's working and not working in today's competitive transportation and tourism landscape. From emerging brands to the most established professionals, these lessons of intelligent marketing will help your marketing plan travel further.
Today, I get to talk to Cynthia Huang. I met her at Focusrite in Phoenix in 2022. And she's at the forefront of revolutionizing the travel industry. And that's not an overstatement. This is someone who's bringing in Web3, bringing in AI into the picture, creating a decentralized organization. Basically, her company, DTravel, is creating a direct booking option for both consumers and property owners in the vacation rental space. And it's doing it as a decentralized organization. So people that are involved get to make the decisions on how the company grows, how the company treats customers, how the company does virtually anything. And it kind of redefines the concept of ownership, allowing those who contribute to the platform's growth get the tangible benefits of participating in decision-making through the DAO, the Decentralized Autonomous Organization, or DAO. I'm learning all these new things because I am not an AI Web3 guy. Well, I'm into AI. I'm not a huge Web3 guy, but I learned a lot today and I'm really excited to introduce Cynthia. So we'll get started now.
Well, thanks for joining me today. I'm super excited to dive in. I think what we'll start with, just because I don't know who here is a Web3 novice like myself, but just give us a crash course on like the concept of DTravel, the concept of this distributed setup. I need to know, basically, like explain it to me like I'm in fourth grade.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I always like to say when talking about blockchain or crypto is that at the end of the day, the best way to think about it is it's an enabling technology, and the what or the how isn't even as important. It's the why, meaning what are the benefits that enables. And so with blockchain, basically the idea is that it can help you keep full control over your payments without relying on a third party, and then you get ownership in the ecosystem that you're using. But I'll talk about DTravel at a high level. So DTravel is what we call a peer-to-peer or direct vacation rental ecosystem. And that means we try and make it as easy as possible for hosts and guests to be able to book directly with each other. And I was just having a conversation with somebody where they said, oh, you know, do you feel like you need to get rid of Airbnb? And that's never what we're trying to say. I think a lot of people think that. But I think that there definitely is a place for sort of everybody within the ecosystem, right? Because these platforms do provide a very valuable service. And there's always going to be people who want to use these platforms solely. But if anybody is trying to diversify away from OTA and really build up a direct booking business so that they can build something more sustainable instead of relying on just one platform, then that's what DTravel Direct is for. So we have taken this ecosystem approach, which means that we are building products that solve specific problems. And our first product, DTravel Direct, is infrastructure and tooling for direct booking, meaning that you can create a premium direct booking website in just a couple of minutes and then use that and send that to guests so that they can book directly with you. And so we like to call it like Shopify for operators. You can set up a direct booking site in just a couple of minutes and then be able to start taking direct bookings, which we think is really important to build a sustainable business. And we have a direct distribution product coming out called Sensei. And that one essentially is an AI meta search for direct booking sites specifically. That will include both.
That basically gets it so like you're on Google's vacation rentals platform and they can book through your reservation technology versus booking through Airbnb, right?
Yeah, so that's live already, but we actually have a native distribution product coming out and that's going to use AI so that for a traveler, for example, right now how it works if you're trying to book travel is you go to a website and then you put in your dates and how many people and you have to kind of scroll through yourself to look for whatever's relevant for you. There might be some amenities that you can check off, but you often have to read the reviews and kind of like look and do a lot of research to see if it's going to be a good fit. Whereas with the product that we're building out for the traveler experience, the idea is that it's very conversational. So you could say, hey, I'm looking for a one-bedroom condo near the beach because I'm a digital nomad and it has to have its own workspace, it has to have fast Wi-Fi, and should have a surfboard rack. And so the AI will actually look through the listings and make sure that it meets the criteria that you have. Obviously, the more specific you are, then there's going to be fewer results that come up, but it should hopefully make the search experience a lot better. And then for operators, the real value there is that it will be a direct booking still. So it's a meta search that will only return direct booking results. And so even with Google Travel, for example, they're still returning OTA results in addition to some direct booking websites. And in the vacation rental industry, we've never actually had a metasearch just for direct bookings. And we think that this is something that a lot of travelers actually want, because obviously, you know, you spend like a minute on social media and everybody's complaining about the fees. So they're trying to be creative about ways to book directly with owners to save on that money. So there's very much a market demand for this from both the operators as well as the travelers.
I wonder, that's something interesting to look at, is like, what are people searching for to find that? Do consumers know that it's called a direct booking? Have you found that to be the case?
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't think they call it a direct booking, but they do say book directly with the owner or the property manager, et cetera. And I've looked at TikTok and Instagram, and there's a lot of content on this where people will create videos that's like, hey, you know, this is how you can have tips and tricks to be able to find the exact same listing from Airbnb and then be able to book directly with the owner. And so I can actually share some of those tips, because I think it's definitely very helpful. And for operators, this is a way for you to think about your omni-channel strategy also. So you can actually use an image, Airbnb, for example, and you can right-click and do a search image within Google. And if there's a matching image, then it's actually going to show the traveler that result. And that's one way they can find your direct booking website. Another one is if you...
As an operator, you want to use the same photos.
Exactly. Forms,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
So I guess... Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go for it. And then I have a more broad questions with my simple brain. But yeah, what's another tip?
Yeah. So another tip is, and we see people using this a lot, is putting in their property management name or their brand name within their profile on different platforms. And that's probably the easiest way that a lot of travelers can find out. So if, let's say, you were like, you know, Bliss Properties, they would do a Google search and then find that on, find your direct booking site also.
How'd you know about my defunct real estate project, Bliss Realty Group, LLC? Goodness.
Is it really?
I don't want to talk about it. I've not maintained the register. I had grand ambitions and it never went anywhere, but that's okay.
It's a great name.
Thank you. I'll let my ancestors know. But tell me a little bit about like this new direct booking platform. What's your go-to-market look like? Because obviously this changes your focus a little bit from, you know, acquiring property customers to acquiring customers that are travelers. So how are you going to take this to market?
Yeah, great question. So obviously B2C as a strategy is different from B2B. One of the ways that we want to do that is obviously because we're using AI, we want to change that travel experience so that it makes it a lot easier. The second thing is to have this concept of travel profiles. So one of the things that's not so convenient about the search experience today is they don't really know who you are, right? They don't know what your preferences are. They don't know anything about you. And it's not like the more you use it, the better that search gets. It's the same process again every time that you go to use a platform. Whereas with AI, it's going to learn and it's also going to be smart enough to only show you relevant things using those search profiles. So I think just the travel experience itself should be better, where that's going to capture people's image or imaginations, especially people who are a younger audience, like millennials and Gen Z. The other thing is trying to find more crypto friendly and digital nomad friendly and budget friendly places, because we feel like those three personas are definitely ones that we want to target initially. And so if we have the right supply to attract those types of people in, then that's going to be a huge win for us, especially on the crypto travelers piece or digital nomads. One of the things that we're seeing is there's a lot of pockets around the world, like Asia and Latin America, where people want to pay in crypto when they travel. And that's for various reasons. Maybe they work in crypto, so they're only getting paid in crypto, or they have most of their assets in crypto for whatever reason. And so they want to find places that will allow them to pay in crypto. And it's quite difficult to do that right now in vacation rentals. Like, you'd have to know if somebody actually accepts it. So we're going to be able to enable that as a search criteria and also give operators the ability to accept crypto.
So many questions coming out of this. So number one, does the market, like, how big is that market? Out of curiosity, I definitely believe it exists, but is that a common issue that you deal with, is people want to book with crypto?
Yeah. So in Thailand, for example, there's a lot of digital nomads who are going to Thailand right now. And we hear so many operators telling us like, hey, so many of our guests are asking if they can pay in crypto. And something in Latin America, for example. So I think this was in Brazil, if I'm not mistaken, where a lot of people, maybe it's not Brazil, I'm probably forgetting where it is, but somewhere in Latin America, a lot of people actually don't hold peso. So they neither hold USD or they hold USDT, which is a stable coin cryptocurrency that's tied one-to-one for US dollar. And I think that just tells you how much in demand there is for people actually using this as a currency and believing that it's more valuable than holding their own currency. And so they want to spend in that currency too. And we see this definitely in places like Turkey, different parts of Asia, and then a lot of different countries in Latin America.
Got it. And then from a go-to-market standpoint, we're really talking about the B2C side right now, right? When we look at acquiring these customers, I would imagine generally people that are spending in crypto are security aware people. Is that a fair assumption? Like that these are like the general archetype is somebody who also uses a VPN?
Not necessarily. I think it depends. So there's definitely people on the spectrum that are like that. I think the more like professional type people, or maybe they're in countries where they can't get access to certain services or websites. But like I said, there's a lot of people in different parts of Asia and Latin America where they're literally using it because it's more stable for them to hold that currency. And so it really is a utility-based currency rather than just a speculation or something else.
And really what I want to talk about, I think, is you've got a new B2C angle, right? This is fairly new, the B2C side.
Mm-hmm.
I want to dig into what your plans are beyond like build it and they will come, because I know that that's not your plan. You obviously got a plan beyond that. How are you planning to take the B2C angle to market? Are there communities that you're going to expand into? Are there conferences? What's your go-to-market plan look like?
Yeah, definitely all of those things. So we want to work with crypto conferences and really any conferences, but definitely crypto conferences, because those type of attendees specifically are looking to pay in crypto. So that's just a really easy partnership for us. As you mentioned, definitely there's a lot of communities. So Nomad List, a lot of different Nomad groups within Facebook, as well as just like different parts like Reddit, et cetera, on the internet. Those are definitely communities that we want to partner with. And the thing that I think is quite different about the travel, and this is why I think a lot of existing travel companies wouldn't be able to replicate what we do, is we have community ownership. So what that means is that for anybody who uses our ecosystem, they actually get rewards back in our token. And that's really important, because one thing that is a little bit strange about vacation rentals is we don't really have rewards generally. So if you think about a lot of the platforms, I mean, some of them now have rewards, but a lot of them don't. And when you're talking about really high fee, like, you know, travelers are paying between 16 to 30% on these platforms, even if they don't see it, like it's baked into the price, right? And yet they're also not getting any rewards back. And so for us, I think a huge part of what our value proposition is if you can get rewards back just for using the platform and you're paying way less fees, then it's just a no-brainer. And the key to that, obviously, is acquiring a lot of supply that's going to be the same experience as what they would get on a different platform.
Sure. Yeah. From a supply standpoint, where are y'all in your acquisition path? How has supply acquisition been going for you?
So we've been trying to target like bigger companies, because it's obviously, we definitely want to onboard sort of the individual operator also. But then for us to scale, it makes a lot more sense for us to go after larger property managers or even other integration partners. So one thing that's been interesting is, I think this just speaks to how much the importance of distribution and demand is in short-term rentals especially, is we have other website builders who don't have any distribution channels themselves. And they obviously want to provide more value to their customers. So they're very interested in integrating with us just for distribution, because then it's obviously a value add.
So there are a lot of website builders for properties, it sounds like?
I wouldn't say a lot. I think the hotel industry definitely has a lot more, just because that industry is a lot more mature. It's growing now, especially because with this focus and increase in direct bookings sort of as a movement, there has been more need and demand for it. I think maybe 5 years ago, it wasn't as much demand, but everybody's sort of waking up to this need to diversify their business and start to build a direct booking portfolio.
And then with taking it back to the marketing side, because you've done the B2B play, I imagine it's a heavily sales driven effort rather than like inbound marketing, right? The acquisition of large property management companies.
The large operator, for sure. Yeah, the smaller ones, they have been coming in about through various efforts like content marketing, partnership marketing, word of mouth, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting to think about the model that you've built and what you're doing, in the fact that I know when we spoke with Focusrite 2 years ago now, I think it's been, you mentioned that over time, it's going to be a decentralized community owned model, the organization. And as a individual owner of an organization with no business partners, it's very interesting for me to think how it would be so different in that way. How do you make decisions? And how do you push through like objectives and get to the next step when you've got multiple stakeholders, all of which are, can you explain that model a little bit more? I guess is the root of that question.
Yeah. So we like to talk about it as gradual decentralization, right? You're not going to get to decentralization on day one. And what decentralization effectively means is us giving more control and ownership to the community to be able to make decisions. And so we've started that journey where this year we started to put up votes for the committee, and we're going to be continuing with that. Obviously, as you identified, you know, initially, operationally, you have to sort of have a core team that will focus on a lot of the execution work. But as we start to build a lot more good framework and models, and some of that stuff will be able to be offered to community. And one step that we're actually taking towards this is we've had a lot of customers ask us about open sourcing, like our website builder, because they might have development resources and want to be able to make certain changes on their own direct booking site.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually love that idea because I think that speaks to this concept of community ownership. And there's no reason why if somebody makes a change on their direct booking site that they can't make that change available for anybody else to adopt. So it's almost like the WordPress model where you suddenly have this marketplace that people can add to and be able to share with the community. And I think that really encourages growth and then also encourages people to feel like they're an owner because now they can contribute in different ways that they are able to.
Got it. Very cool. So you're in travel and you're obviously more in tune with the AI Web3 side of travel than a lot of the people that I get to speak with. What trends have you seen in the convergence of travel and Web3? What's the update in that space?
So what's interesting is that over the last few years, even though, you know, crypto and Web3 was like a very hyped up thing in 2021, 2022, and then it kind of dropped along with the macro conditions. But there's been a lot of companies in the travel space and really big ones that have continued to invest in Web3 technology. So for example, Japan Airlines actually is launching an NFT and they're going to be one of our partners. So we're part of their launch strategy. And Lufthansa came out with UpTrip, which is an app where you can scan your boarding pass from any of their partners. So whether it's Swiss, Lufthansa, or Allied partners, then you can pick, they call it a playing card. You can pick three of them, and then collecting different playing cards will actually give you different benefits. And so, you know, there's these really big companies who believe in the tech and who are actually investing in testing this out. Etihad, that's another one that had their own NFT. So I think that definitely on the technology piece anyway, especially relates to loyalty and rewards, a lot of travel companies actually see the benefit of that. And so I think over the next, 10 years, we'll see more and more of that. And now with the introduction of AI, I think that will also really accelerate adoption of Web3. Because if you combine AI and Web3 together, what you really get is this ability to personalize that is a perfect marriage of Web3 and AI. Because with Web3, you have tons of data that's accessible and open and interoperable. And then the AI can parse through all of that data and be able to use that to learn and make very, very specific recommendations that are personalized, which, you know, we've been talking in travel forever about personalization. We haven't actually seen that happen. But I think now with AI, we can actually see that being a reality.
How do the currently available highly used AI models like ChatGPT and Bard, whatever you're using, how does that play with the Web3 model of decentralization? Because to my knowledge, a lot of that is going through central servers with one or two big companies. How do you reconcile those facts?
Yeah, I know there's a lot of AI companies, or I shouldn't say a lot, but there are some AI companies that are trying to decentralize language models in Web3, for example, and making that data accessible. So I think what we'll see over the next few years, and we've kind of seen this already, is there's been a lot of lawsuits against OpenAI for the use of, you know, quote unquote, like open information, right? But if, let's say, for example, they're monetizing off of that data, off of your data, the question is, you know, should you get something from that? And so with Web3, if, let's say, for example, you could willingly share your data and then the language model uses your data, but you get, you know, some proportion based on however much data you're sharing, I think that's actually a more sustainable model that in the long run will be a lot better for everybody. Because I think right now we don't know what data these AIs are actually taking in. I mean, they're definitely obviously ingesting all of our data.
All of
it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. Like, especially for you guys, if you're creating content and they're taking your data, I mean, is it fair for them to use that and then be able to monetize off of that? I would say probably not. And so how do we get to a fairer use of that or have some sort of like permissioned access?
Yeah, I think that has been on my mind. It's like, how does the AI play with Web3 and with the way people are trying to build organizations and build communities now? I guess there are marketers listening to this podcast. How can marketers integrate these philosophies of whether it's AI or Web3? Like, what are small actions that someone could take to move in that direction if they're interested in it?
Well, one big ethos about Web3 that I think any company can take on, and I think we've seen this happen over the last decade also, is this concept of being really community driven and community focused. So community as a discipline has really come into its own, and there's a lot of resources on community management and community as a whole. So I think for marketers, obviously marketing is its own discipline, but understanding how you think about community and community growth is actually very, very critical to a marketing org. And what we've seen is that a lot of really big companies have actually been investing on the community side. So, you know, you take these companies who maybe they're building a new feature or they're building a new product and then they get feedback from their community. I mean, Glossier, which is a big makeup brand, this is actually how they were doing a lot of their product development, is they would share stuff with their community and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? We're looking at this or this. Which one do you prefer? And they got a lot of community feedback. And so people felt really, really connected to the brand because they felt like the brand cared about them first and foremost. And that, I think, is something really, really critical to really any organization that's looking to grow, because having that touch point with your customers in a really authentic way where they feel like you care about them is really important. Because, like, I mean, I think paid ads can definitely do so much, but having that genuine connection and that place where your community members can go and share their feedback is really important.
That's such an interesting insight, because I'm such a performance marketer. We're such a like spend a dollar and make a dollar 20 cents and you've got a 20 and then it costs you 10 cents to deliver whatever you're delivering and you have a 10% or 10 cent gross margin. That's like how I think. But if you build a community, you're really like, it's interesting because you're talking about this model where even OTA, for instance, could build a community, right? And build a loyal customer base, which is incredibly hard. They don't have to pay to acquire the customer, and that 60% of the customer lifetime value or the customer value they'd be spending on customer acquisition can go to a rewards program, right? And you can create this flywheel of a growing community, and that's what you're doing. What is the name of your program again?
Our token is called PRVL.
Okay, got it. When you say a token, it's like something you hold in a wallet. Is it an NFT?
A cryptocurrency.
Or is it
No, it's a token.
Okay, got it. See, I'm useless in this department.
No. It's so very new to a lot of people. So we actually have a wallet that you can easily create just using your email address. And so you can use that to collect rewards and also to take payments. So we try to make it as easy as possible for anyone to get started with crypto, even if you have no prior knowledge or experience.
And is that to like the US dollar? Is it the stable coin? How does that hold value, the rewards? What is that tied to?
So the token is available on different exchanges and it's really based on the market.
Got it. Okay. So the rewards could be worth something one day and they could be worth something different another day. And that's kind of just when you sign up for it, you kind of know that because you know the space.
Yeah, it's a cryptocurrency. So there's definitely fluctuations. I wanted to just touch on what you mentioned about this idea of building community and then, you know, having that brand equity essentially.
Sure.
Kind of be a lot of the costs that you put in. That's how Airbnb actually started. So I've been a host for over a decade. And when I first joined as a host, I was like so blind. I drank all the Kool-Aid. Like my dream job was to work at Airbnb, right? And I think that they've built this really, really beautiful community where people felt really bought in because they did listen to people. I mean, like they would have these meetups in different cities where they would listen to their hosts and get feedback from them. They would have these like VIP events where they would meet with super hosts in different cities. It felt like they really, really cared. And I think they just moved away from that. So they did an amazing job of building that and building a lot of value, but I think they basically lost a lot of it, if not most of it.
I guess that's one of the values of the decentralized ownership, is that you don't move away from that unless it's what your ownership. So like it's more of a guarantee that you're not going to move in that direction, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you hit it spot on. It's like we are trying to build this model where, you know, we can't do it, even if we wanted to, because at the end of the day, it's everybody in the community deciding what to do, not us.
And do you have like a crash course for the simpleton like myself on how that works? Like something people could read that I can put in the podcast show notes?
Yeah, I think I have something I'll link it for you.
That would be awesome. Is there anything that you want to share with our listeners? Again, typically they're going to be marketers, marketing managers, marketing directors, and VPs of marketing at travel companies. Anything you want to share with the listener base based on everything that you've learned, everything you're working on?
Well, I mean, I think everybody's been talking about AI for the last year. And if you're not using AI, like even as, you know, on an individual level, learning about it, using ChatGPT to try and understand like how you can interact with the model and then use it in your workday, I think very quickly we're going to fall pretty far behind. So I think it's really important that people use it on a user level and then try and figure out ways that you can incorporate it into your business. Because the really powerful thing about it is that, you know, if let's say you're a solo entrepreneur, or even if you have a small team, you can literally take AI and it's as if you have like twice as many team members. Mm-hmm. So it's a really powerful tool and can save you a lot of money.
You can make agents and put it on your team list on your website, right? Yeah. This is our CFO of our company that's doing $20,000 a year in revenue. We are full-time CFO, right?
Yeah, that might not be such a crazy idea in just a few years.
Honestly, I think that you're going to be able to get a fractional support for way less. Like yep. Like a strong enough financial mind, a strong enough marketing mind for fractional support. Very cool. So most importantly, my last question for you, Cynthia, is where are you traveling next?
Oh, good question. A couple of places. I'll be in Rotterdam for going to a music festival. And then also I'll be in Berlin at ITB Berlin. So if anybody is going to be at the conference, definitely hit me up. I'm going to be speaking on the Thursday, I think. So if any travel professionals are there.
I will be there. I will definitely see your presentation. Super cool. Incredible. Well, we'll link up there. Thanks again for joining me today. This was awesome. It was such a unique topic to be talking about on the Travel Marketing Compass podcast. So I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you next month.
Thanks so much, Brennan.
For more empowering ideas, visit propelic.com. We're on a mission to create more diversity and thought for the planet and dedicated to helping brands, both large and small, increase their reach through intelligent travel, transportation, and tourism marketing. PROPELLIC.com.